This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is lashing out following his indictment by a Manhattan grand jury. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
Former President Donald Trump says his unprecedented indictment on charges involving payments made during the 2016 presidential campaign is political persecution. Trump, who has always denied any wrongdoing and repeatedly attacked the probe, predicted the indictment will damage Democrats in 2024. In a statement, his lawyer said Trump did not commit any crime. They said they will offer a vigorous defense to what they say is a political prosecution. The Manhattan District Attorney's investigation centered on money paid to former porn actor Stormy Daniels and former Playboy model Karen McDougal, whom Trump feared would go public with claims that they had extramarital sexual encounters with him. Trump is expected to surrender to authorities next week. I'm Norman Hall.
Turkey's parliament on Thursday ratified Finland's bid to join NATO, lifting the last hurdle of the Nordic country's ascension into the Western Alliance. Finland and neighboring Sweden each dropped decades of non-alignment with their applications to join the military alliance after Russia invaded Ukraine last year. Since their accession, bids were ratified at a NATO summit in July. NATO member states have gone through their own processes of giving final approval for Finland and Sweden. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has repeatedly said he expected both Finland and Sweden will eventually become NATO members. And Kenya, Nairobi, faced another day of anti-government protests called by opposition leader Raila Odinga, who was accusing the president, William Ruto, of stealing last year's election and failing to control the surging cost of living. For more news, join us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris Thursday pledged continuing cooperation with Tanzania as she met with the country's president, the only female head of state in Africa, in the middle of her first official visit to the continent. Tanzania's president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, took office when former President John Magufuli died in 2021. She is credited for rolling back some of his unpopular policies, such as his resistance to COVID-19 vaccinations, his ban on pregnant schoolgirls, and his limits on freedoms of expression. The United States will provide $560 million in bilateral assistance to Tanzania in the next fiscal year. The White House is condemning the arrest of an American journalist who has been taken into custody and jailed in Russia on spy charges. We get more on the story from AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
The State Department says it's been in contact with the Russian government, while National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says
targeting of American citizens by the Russian government is absolutely, completely unacceptable.
Evan Gershkovich works for the Wall Street Journal. Russian security officials say he was arrested in the Ural Mountains, trying to obtain classified information about a military complex. The KGB alleges he was acting on instructions from the U.S. government.
Sadly, this is not a new tactic for Mr. Putin and for Russian officials.
The White House says the administration's been in contact with Gerkovich's family. This is the first time since the mid-80s a U.S. correspondent has been jailed on spying charges by Russia. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Senegal's top opposition leader has been given a two-month suspended sentence after being found guilty of libel. Ousmane Sonko Thursday convicted of spreading false statements and will have to pay about $330,000 to the Minister of Tourism, who accused the politician of defamation and public insults. Sonko had alleged the minister stole $47 million from a government agency. Sonko did not attend Thursday's hearing. Pope Francis' health is improving after he was hospitalized with a respiratory infection, and he has resumed working while his treatments continue, the Vatican spokesman said in a statement on Thursday. We get more from Lauren Anthony.
Pope Francis's health is improving, and he started working again after being hospitalized with a respiratory infection. That's according to a Vatican spokesman, who also said treatment for the pontiff is ongoing. All of this comes as preparations for Easter events were underway on Thursday. The Pope was unexpectedly taken to Rome's Gemelli Hospital on Wednesday after complaining of breathing difficulties.
That was Lauren Anthony reporting. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, March 31st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. media report that former President Donald Trump has been indicted by a New York grand jury.
I was just looking on Twitter, and one of the first tweets that I saw was from his son saying that this can't happen because this is not a third world developing country, which I found to be very curious because we know that in the African context, not many African leaders have actually been prosecuted.
Vice President Kamala Harris continues a week-long three-nation trip to Africa today, Friday. Nigeria's secret police says it is monitoring possible threats to democracy. Kenya's opposition claims an attempt to assassinate leader Raila Odinga. Hundreds of companies take part in American Chamber of Commerce Summit in Kenya.
It is with pleasure that I announce a finalized deal between Moderna and the government of Kenya to build a $500 million mRNA vaccine facility in Nairobi.
And Senegal's opposition leader is giving a suspended sentence. Those stories for Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. media are reporting that former U.S. President Donald Trump has been indicted by a Manhattan, New York grand jury. This is the first time in U.S. history that a current or former president has been indicted. Chipo Dandere is a Zimbabwean-born assistant professor of Africana studies at Wesleyan College. She tells me that the indictment proves that no one is above the law under the U.S. judicial system.
I think I'm surprised. This is the first time that a former president in the U.S. has been indicted. And I was just looking on Twitter, and one of the first tweets that I saw was from his son saying that this can't happen because this is not a third world developing country. And a lot of the comments that came up were supporters of President Trump saying this is not Africa, which I found to be very curious because we know that in the African context, not many African leaders have actually been prosecuted in the same framework that people are saying this is what's happening to Donald Trump. And so for me, the immediate thought was, okay, so what does this tell us about American democracy? And I think on one hand, there's the concern that if you prosecute a former president, that undermines democracy in some way, shape or form, because this was somebody who was elected by people. On the other hand, if you don't and their crimes are pretty severe, then you start to get these comparisons, right, that American democracy is porous. Right now on the African continent, we are looking at the case of former President Zuma, which is likely to go to trial in the next couple of months for corruption as well. And I've seen sort of these comparisons between Zuma and Trump, that they're both populist, that putting them to trial would cause a lot of unrest. The people that support them will show up on the streets and there will be some disruption. And I do have to say that one of the things that makes Trump much, much similar to a lot of African leaders that we've seen is that he is a populist leader and that the people that support him are very likely to go into the streets in support of him. So there is that tension with what is the best way to handle the politics around populist leaders. We have a strong following. We have a very vocal following. But that's to come, right? And we've seen with President Zuma's case that even with all of his support and all of the concern that his supporters would disrupt business in South Africa, the trial is still likely to happen. The case went to court and he was found in contempt due to corruption. So there are a lot of lessons to be learned. And I also think the other thing is that the Trump indictment might send some shivers down the spines of leaders who are themselves engaged in corruption, because now their citizens are looking at a modern day ongoing a trial. Not to say that this hasn't happened before, but there is something about Trump and the contemporariness of this happening, right? So citizens in Africa and elsewhere are going to be looking and saying, well, what's going to happen to our corrupt leaders? And perhaps people would demand some justice in that way.
Professor Dandere, thank you so much for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa. We do appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Chipo Dandere is a Zimbabwe-born assistant professor of Africana studies at Wesleyan College. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris departs Tanzania today, Friday, for Zambia, the third and final leg of her week-long three-nation visit to Africa. On Thursday, Harris met with Samia Suluhu Hassan, Tanzania's current and first female president, and praised her as a champion of democracy. According to local media, journalist Charles Kumbe in the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam, tells me that Vice President Harris and President Suluhu Hassan discussed a wide range of topics, including economic, good governance, and democracy.
President Samia Hassan and Vice President Kamala Harris, they have discussed so many issues and so many topics. They have discussed on areas regarding raising democracy and good governance in Tanzania. They have also discussed issues pertaining long-term economic growth for Tanzania, climate crisis, and then regional and global challenges. They have also discussed on issues of technology and democracy, good governance.
We know that President Samia Suluhu Hassan has been reversing some of the policies of the late President John Magufuli when it comes to democracy.
During the previous leadership under the late John Magufuli, the relations between Tanzania and the U.S. were a bit challenging, since because the late Magufuli was focusing on development, as he used to say. But under Samia Suluhu Hassan, currently we see that she has started to move further and change her predecessor's policies, such as meeting with opposition politicians, allowing political rallies, also releasing some of political prisoners who are leaders from opposition parties and also members of opposition parties. So on that area, the U.S., through the United States Agency for National Development, USAID, and the government of Tanzania today, they have signed a five-year agreement on aid worth approximately $1.1 billion on area of good governance, democracy, and education. So you can see that the U.S. is focusing on strengthening its ties with Tanzania and also making sure that good governance, democracy is adhered by President Hassan's leadership.
What are the ordinary Tanzanians saying about the visit of Vice President Kamala Harris to their country?
Many Tanzanian citizens have welcomed Kamala Harris' visit to Tanzania, and many are seeing this as an opportunity for them to experience another era of development in their country.
That was journalist Charles Kumbe speaking with us from the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam. More than 700 delegates and 300 companies are participating in the third edition of the American Chamber of Commerce Summit in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. U.S. government and private sector delegations are meeting with counterparts from Rwanda, Tanzania, Uganda, and Ethiopia and Kenya. VOA's Maria Madialo reports.
Kenya's President William Ruto said Kenya is open for business, highlighting a deal his government struck with U.S. biotech company Moderna.
It is with pleasure that I announce a finalized deal between Moderna and the government of Kenya to build a $500 million mRNA vaccine facility in Nairobi.
Ruto spoke at the third so-called AmCham Business Summit, a two-day gathering where business leaders exchange market intelligence and explore areas of opportunity, especially for commercial engagement, says Maxwell Okello, CEO of AmCham Kenya. He notes it follows the recent U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit hosted by the White House.
This summit coming hot on the heels of the Africa Leaders Summit for us does two things. One, it is a perfect demonstration of some of the commitments that we had from the U.S. government. And then two is we are very keen to see how we can actually advance commercial engagement. And so we thought that this would be a good platform to create partnerships. So bring local companies who can be counterparts to those American companies who are interested in coming into Kenya.
Scott Eisner, president of the U.S. Chamber's Africa Business Center, brought a group of over 30 executives. He told VOA They hope to forge concrete private sector opportunities and joint ventures.
We have plenty of tech companies with us, but we also have pharmaceutical, medical devices, technology, satellite companies that are doing mapping of the world, infrastructure developers around Caterpillar, the GEs of the world. So we really have arranged for a very strong delegation representing the complexities of America's business community.
Zonzi Katana is a process engineer for the Kenyan-based startup Semiconductor Technologies Limited, who had a booth at the exhibition hall. The company manufactures microprocessors, memory chips, and sensors.
We have actually been able to meet many representatives from many American companies. I believe there's one person we met who we see might be a potential supplier of our raw material.
At the summit, seven African companies in the agriculture sector were awarded grants totaling $5.1 million by the U.S. Agency for International Development through its Prosper Africa and Feed the Future programs. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, March 31st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. During a third day of anti-government demonstrations in Kenya on Thursday, police used tear gas to disperse protesters. The opposition says their vehicles were damaged and that the police fired at least five bullets into a convoy carrying their leader, Raila Odinga. The government has not responded to the allegations. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Business has been disrupted, property destroyed, and lives lost since the opposition in Kenya began anti-government protests last week. Yesterday, Thursday, at least four journalists were injured in Nairobi and Kisumu while covering the demonstrations. The skirmishes erupted when the police tried to disperse the protesters using tear gas canisters. Opposition leader Raila Odinga, who claims the police tried to kill him, says there's no justification for excessive use of force against peaceful, unarmed citizens exercising their democratic rights. The government has not yet responded to the allegations. The opposition insists the protest must go on.
Got then live bullets. My own car was hit seven times with the live bullets. And you can see to the direction of the bullets were all aimed at me. We want to say that, look, this is really terrible. These demonstrations are going to continue. And on Monday, there's going to be another demonstration, irrespective of what our detractors say or think.
Opposition leaders fled for safety as police forced their convoy to drive away. The vehicle of Odinga's running mate in the last election, Martha Karua, was damaged. She's threatening to take legal action against Kenya's Inspector General of Police, Japheth Koome.
They were deliberately throwing tear gas. I do not know whether 20 or how many canisters were thrown and directly at the many cars, including mine, that the windscreen was it's shattered, but it's still on. I'll personally be suing Koome for the damage on my car, because it is illegal.
The party leader of the Wiper Democratic Movement, Kalonzo Musyoka, says the government should let the demonstrations go on peacefully.
I will not allow them to get this far. They crossed the red line, because we had hoped that after dispersing the crowd, at least it would allow us to go ahead. But that's when the Raila Odinga's car came under serious barrage, including live bullets.
The anti-government demonstrators say they are protesting against high cost of living, as well as allegations of rigging in the last election, which saw the defeat of Odinga by now President William Ruto. Odinga and his supporters want the government to include opponents, an idea proposed by those favoring the proportional representation rather than the winner-takes-it-all system of elections. He says this could be achieved by constitutional reforms based on the Building Bridges Initiative, BBI. It's a set of amendments initially proposed in October 2019, but nullified by the courts in Kenya. Authorities have since maintained that they will not bow to what they call the opposition's intimidation. They say it is the protesters who are violent, stating the Inspector General of Police, Japheth Koome, maintains that the demonstrations are not legal.
Political issues which need political solution. But when it comes to security, I've amended as an Inspector General to ensure I protect life and property. I will not sleep on the job. These politicians crossed the line.
Thousands of people are counting the losses that they have incurred since the opposition called for the anti-government protests that have often turned chaotic. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
A court in Senegal has given opposition leader Ousmane Sonko a 2-month suspended sentence in a libel case brought against him by the country's tourism minister. He is ordered to pay about $332,000. Sonko had allegedly accused the tourism minister of embezzling. He and his supporters have said that the charges were politically motivated by President Macky Sall's government to prevent Sonko from contesting the 2024 presidential election. Mamadou Lamine Diallo is an opposition member of Senegal's parliament. He tells me that the whole court process was not fair because authorities denied Sonko's French lawyer entry into the country.
The court decided this morning to condemn Ousmane Sonko for sentence of 2 months. But the sentence is not applied right now. In French, we say sursis.
You mean suspended sentence?
Suspended sentence for 2 months, and then an equivalent of $400,000, more or less, as a fine.
So the court found him guilty?
Yes, the court found him guilty of defamation against the minister, Nyang.
Does this mean that he cannot run for president again?
What I just wanted to mention is it was not balanced as a court. For example, the French lawyer of Nyang, he was in Senegal, no problem. When he came to Senegal. On the other hand, Maître Branco, Juan Branco, lawyer of Ousmane Sonko, did not accept him yesterday night. When he arrived at the airport of Blaise Diagne, the authorities sent him back to France, you see? So it was not balanced as a trial, and this should be mentioned. Now, regarding the political consequences of the sentence, what people think right now, are waiting for the reaction of the lawyers of Ousmane Sonko, is that his eligibility is not at risk. However, I will just mention to people that we have to be very vigilant with Macky Sall, because we know that his objective from the beginning is to select his own political opponents by using the judiciary system. So we have to be very careful. It's not finished yet, and this is the first level, as I said, and then we have to monitor the situation very closely.
So what did you say about the French lawyer? Are you saying that Sonko was not properly represented in the court?
Yes, he was not properly represented in the court. His French lawyer, Mr. Juan Branco, was not accepted in Senegal yesterday when he came from Paris. They asked him to go back to France. On the other hand, Maître Sur, the lawyer of Nyan, the minister Nyan, is in Dakar. And the other thing that the lawyers of Ousmane Sonko, they said that the trial should be postponed because Sonko has medical problems, but the court did not accept that.
Mamadou Lamine Diallo is an opposition member of Senegal's parliament. He was speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Supporters of Nigeria's ruling party are calling on the Department of State Services, often referred to as Nigeria's secret police, to name the politicians the agency says are plotting to set up an interim government to prevent the handover of power to President-elect Bola Tinubu. Opposition parties continue to reject the outcome of the February presidential election in which Bola Ahmed Tinubu was declared the winner. Timothy Obiezu reports from the capital, Abuja.
Felix Muaka, National Publicity Secretary of the ruling All Progressives Congress, told VOA Thursday that the APC has yet to officially react to reports of a threat to the nation's democracy. The secret police, in a statement late Wednesday, said some Nigerian politicians were plotting to institute an interim government ahead of May 29th, when President Muhammadu Buhari is due to hand over power to President-elect Bola Ahmed Tinubu. The Department of State Services said the politicians are trying to, quote, sponsor endless violent mass protests in major cities to warrant a declaration of state of emergency and obtain frivolous court injunctions to forestall the inauguration of new executive administrations, end quote. The DSS did not name politicians involved in the interim government plot, but pledged to take legal measures against them. The declaration of Tinubu as president-elect last month was rejected by the opposition People's Democratic Party and Labour Party. Both parties have challenged the outcome in court and have been speaking to local television stations calling Tinubu's election illegal. Mwaka voiced support for the DSS.
There's been quite a lot of incendiary statements made by leaders of the opposition, in particular leaders of the Labour Party. I think it is absolutely wrong and unpatriotic, and in fact almost teetering on the edge of treasonable felony, to then instigate any kind of civil disobedience that may bring the country into severe crisis. The DSS is well within its statutory authority. If they decide that a threat posed by this element is sufficient to justify arrests and prosecution, I am quite certain that the DSS will do everything within its authority to keep the peace in Nigeria.
Observers say the February elections lacked transparency. There were numerous reports of violence, voter intimidation, and technical problems that caused delays. But the DSS said in its statement the election was peaceful and that it is the alleged plot by politicians that could plunge Nigeria into crisis. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with football. The Confederation of African Football has announced that the competition in Ivory Coast will begin with the opening match at the Alassane Ouattara Stadium in Abidjan on the 13th of January 2024, while the finals will be played on the 11th of February 2024. Six teams, including defending champions Senegal, have booked their place at next year's Africa Cup of Nations after rounds 3 and 4 of qualifying matches were played that ended this week. Algeria, Burkina Faso, Morocco, South Africa and Tunisia are the other sides who have already done enough to join the Teranga Lions and host Ivory Coast at the tournament. But several countries have also already been eliminated ahead of the two remaining sets of fixtures that will be played in June and September. Botswana, Lesotho, Liberia, Madagascar and Sao Tome and Principe are the nations now playing only for pride. Staying with football news, the Federation of Uganda Football Association has relieved Jackson Mayanja of his duties as a Uganda Under-20 Hippos coach. Mayanja was in charge of the Hippos on interim basis after he replaced Moli Baikoso. Despite helping the Hippos to win the SACAFA Zona AFCON qualifiers in Sudan last year, the former Ugandan international didn't deliver on the target to take them to the World Cup. In cricket news, South Africa will face the Netherlands in the ODIs that could define their entire year, aiming to seal their place at the World Cup. Following an exciting but disappointing 2-1 defeat against the West Indies, the Proteas need to win both matches against the Dutch and hope Ireland lose at least one of their three clashes with Bangladesh in May. The top eight teams in the World Cup Super League automatically qualify for the World Cup in India, with the bottom five needing to go through further qualifiers with five associate teams. Quinton de Kock is South Africa's Proteas opening batsman.
Honestly, we have been batting really well. Obviously, we were disappointed after the loss. But also, you know, fairly happy in the way we went about things. Obviously, it's, you know, they played really well, the West Indies. Or at least do my best of it. I'm pretty sure the other guys will also make sure. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll rock up 100% and ready to go.
In rugby news, Kenya men national rugby team, the Shujaa, will take on series leaders, New Zealand, in their Pool D opening duel of the Hong Kong Sevens at the Hong Kong Stadium on Friday. The relegation-threatened side will then confront Ireland before renewing their continental rivalry with South Africa in their last pool outing on Saturday. And finally, in athletics, two-time world 5,000 meters champion Helen Obiri has been entered for the Boston Marathon, slated for April 7th. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, March 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing you will have a great weekend.